So it's never been easy for Reverend Richards. Remember, this is his voice. It's never been easy for me to draw a circle freehand. I mean, a real circle. For one thing, I'm left-handed. I know that's no excuse, and I don't mean to offend left-handers who aren't supremely competent circle drawers. But if you're left-handed, you know how pencil markings can smear as your hand moves across the page. So I remember a lot of smeared circles in grade school. Plus, I don't happen to be very good at drawing in general. And I just can't figure this out, except for the fact that I have put absolutely no effort or time into getting better at it. But I remember when I was asked to draw circles as a child in school, they always came out as sad little ovals, circle-like perhaps, but not circles, not real circles. And then I used a compass, and I remember that it seemed quite magical to me. Even though I may have ripped that paper with the sharp point, and I'll blame that as on the fact that I am left-handed, as illogical as that may be, but I remember watching this shape form, finally a proper circle, a perfect circle, all points equidistant from the center. And I thought, well, I can do that, and I tried it freehand. All points equidistant from the center. I thought all points equidistant. Well, not on my circles. They just didn't come out right. And we Unitarian Universalists like to get things right, don't we? We humans like to get things right. There is that part of our brain, perhaps, and believe me, I'm no neuroscientist. Do not call on me for circle drawing or brain surgery, but I know there is a part of us that yearns to get things right. We have a picture in our head of what we are after, and we are deeply satisfied when we achieve it, and deeply dissatisfied if we don't. If we're going to draw a circle, by gosh, we are going to draw a circle, and we know what a circle is supposed to look like. And if we are to draw the circle wider, well, it made me wonder, if we're going to draw the circle wider, wouldn't we also have to draw it longer in order for it to remain a circle? All points equidistant and all that? And I see the puzzled looks and the shaking heads. I think this guy has missed the point. It's a metaphor, right? Aren't ministers supposed to understand metaphor? But bear with me for just a few moments. What I'm saying is that the drawing of the circle wider is something of a messy proposition, unpleasant even, if we are stuck on making the perfect circle. Have you ever seen the reorganization that takes place when we've all gathered together in a circle? Let's say a congregational group or gathering of some sort. We've gathered in a circle, and then people realize we have more people attending than the circle holds. We scooch our chairs and add chairs, and realize that now we have a curvy, chaotic configuration that does not quite meet the circle standards because we can't all see each other. Maybe we are in a straight line that curves at the edges, and sometimes a wavy line or a really wavy line. Like if you end up having someone sit behind you and you know you are not in the circle, so we scooch up some more, and we maybe have to move a table to spread out a little further, and might end up realizing that the room will not lend itself to a perfect circle. So we just need to make it good enough to make do, to make the less than perfect circle to hold the people who are present. But how do we do it? How do we go about drawing the circle wider? Do we sigh in frustration as we look at the now oblong that was once our beautiful circle? Do we as we skid the table across the floor? Do we resent this interruption of the scheduled activities? Are we visibly flabbergasted by the delay? Are we visibly upset when returning to the chair that we were sitting in, we find it's now occupied by a newcomer? And damn, the only reason that was open is because we were nice enough to go get chairs set up for the others. And now we have to look for a new seat on one of those chairs we didn't like sitting on. And sure enough, we actually end up sitting behind someone in this now deeply imperfect circle. So how do we go about drawing the circle wider? I have probably been guilty of engaging that task with something less than graciousness at times, feeling all those things I just mentioned and letting it show as I have sought to get back to the matters at hand. But let me tell you, this making room, rearranging, drawing the circle wider, this is not an interruption or a delay of the work at hand. This is the work. Draw the circle wider or longer. Have it snake around immovable objects, travel up and down risers, and find the shape it needs to take. Do whatever you need to do to allow more people to be included. Don't get hung up on the perfect circle. It's made up of people, after all. Focus on the joy of welcoming, not on the frustration of rearranging. And prepare for the work. June Minichel shares with us through the words of Leslie Hazelton that the Enzo, in Zen practice, that's this, the circle hand-drawn in a single fluid brushstroke is often incomplete. You see, it's incomplete here. Left slightly open as through an invitation to everything beyond it. We can cut down some of that frustration of rearranging if we prepare for the work. Any circle we make should have an opening. Sometimes we inadvertently, unintentionally close that opening, delighting in the construction of a perfect circle. But we're not looking for perfection. We're looking for inclusion, invitation. Draw the circle wide was the theme of the Pacific Southwest District Assembly in 2016 at the Unitarian Society of Santa Barbara. And I took a few notes from that gathering. Reverend Susan Frederick Gray, who at the time of this writing was president of the Unitarian Universalist Association, asked, "How are we accountable to the people who haven't found us yet?" I'm going to read that again. How are we accountable to the people who haven't found us yet? Reverend Allison Miller, who was also running for president of the association, asked, "How must we adapt and change to welcome people who thirst for our healing message?" This faith, said Reverend Rosemary Bray McNatt, president of Star King School for the Ministry, this faith saves lives. Saves lives. "I want to save our lives as citizens and human beings," she said. I want to save our lives as citizens and human beings. That clear purpose has only grown more urgent over these past 3 years, or this past month. We have something precious to offer in that endeavor. This faith, I have seen it, saves lives. So how are we accountable to the people who haven't found us yet? How must we adapt and change to welcome people who thirst for our healing message? Draw the circle wide, and draw it wider still. We need to leave an opening in our circle, right? Take a lesson from the Enzo in Zen practice. That came to mind with this hymn, the words of this hymn. Here we have gathered, gathered side by side, circle of kinship, come and step inside. Excuse me. And just picturing that in my mind, how does one step inside of a circle? When I imagine a circle, it's closed. It is indeed more of an Enzo. If someone is to step inside, there must be an opening, which also means the circle can be described as perpetually incomplete, which for those of us who want to make sure we get things right, can lead to great anxiety. But what promise it holds? What promise if we are willing to adapt and change in order to welcome people who thirst for our healing message? What promise if we leave an opening in our circle, set out an open chair or two or three, even give up our choice seat and find another place among the new imperfect curves of inclusion we have created so that all have a place. As we prepare to host the District Assembly of UU Congregations of the Pacific Southwest District this April, when this was written, and yes, you will be hearing much more about this, as we prepare to host this gathering, making room will be a challenge. Space is an issue. There are all sorts of creative ideas floating about at this point about how we use outdoor areas, possibly the park building, other locations, field trips, but the real challenge is not only that we make room, but how we make room, how we open this place so dear to us, to those who will come, how we open ourselves to welcoming others. I have watched people enter a room and encounter a closed circle. And even though people graciously scooch and make room and provide a chair, there is an uncomfortable, intentional message that we didn't expect you to be here. And now we must move, must open the circle, must be inconvenienced in order to accommodate your unexpected arrival. That initial moment and the feelings it carries can never be reclaimed. We could have prepared an invitation to join, an opening in the circle, an empty chair, but instead, we have given the feeling that we are politely accommodating an intrusion. And now, God forbid, the near perfection of our circle is ruined, as you can't get everybody to see exactly how they should move to retain geometric purity. But the beauty of the Zen circle, the beauty of the circle we invoke when we encourage ourselves to draw the circle wider, the beauty of that circle lies precisely, or more precisely, imprecisely, in its imperfection. Draw the circle wide, draw the circle wider than what we expect is necessary each and every circle we create. May we leave an opening in every circle we create as an invitation. May we add a chair or two whenever we gather together. May we draw on the wide side of the brain, the side that knows that inviting in, making room, offering welcome, changing our shape is never an interruption or a delay of what we do. It is what we do. It is central. Or thereabouts, let's not get hung up on the geometry. Rather, let us practice the sacred flexibility that allows us to give up our geometric purity when it comes to our circles, so that we are unafraid to draw them wider, stretch them longer, and find joy in the task of rearranging. Let us be fearless in our willingness to make new shapes so that we may be accountable to the people who haven't found us yet, so we may welcome those who thirst for our healing message, so that we may engage with our people and our partners, the work before us, to save our lives as citizens and human beings. A perfect circle is uninteresting, a closed system containing nothing, while an imperfect one vibrates with warmth. It invites us into the moment of its creation. It is open, human, fallible, an expression that is of soul.
Any response?
No?
She was just giving a thumbs up.
I never thought of this before as far as opening the circle and, you know, letting people know that there's room that we saved for you. I never thought about that. So, but it is awkward. Everybody, if you don't do that, everybody has to move and, you know, making noise. And so thank you for opening our eyes to this. Appreciate it.
I wanted to sit here so I could participate. I want to say one thing. You've probably heard us mention The Art of Gathering. Annie had recommended that book to me a few months ago and read it. There's a lot of themes in that that relate to this theme today. So if it's been something you've been thinking about, you might choose to read that. And then the other thing I wanted to mention was that this making space for people, I wasn't, when I offered to work with services, I wasn't convinced that the service order should remain the same. I thought maybe it needed to be mixed up, and I would never be opposed to mixing anything up. But and I can remember Sam talking about the order and someone else of why it had been structured the way it was. And I realized that by having a structure that is flexible, it actually is more compelling for people if they know mostly what to expect. And, you know, the readings change up, the songs change up every week, but the structure is more or less there. And it reminded me of this sermon, actually, that you have that structure. So, like, people know what to expect in a circle, but if there's no space for them to come in and be welcomed, so the perfect circle is no good. It needs to be an imperfect circle. And so that's why.
Sermon, and I think it's the third reason why we need to keep our little haven here. Jeff mentioned the first two, the people of origin that created this space. So impressed, and it may be due to the type of events that I of this family and not to be left out. And it took some doing. And I called Rosie and she's like, "Where are you?" And she came over to the rescue. AAA never showed up.
Thank you, Amy, for that, because it feeds right into a lot of visitors too enthusiastically. Because some people just want to sit in the back and watch. You know, that might be one way, but I'm sure.
Significant challenges, successes, and milestones that impact your life. We now invite you to please come forward.
My younger son, who's Joe, who's 27. He was the first baby here. And he graduated graduated college during COVID. So there was no ceremony for him. And he has a degree in script writing, which is very hard to find a job doing that. So he was working in different warehouses, and you know, the guys there aren't very supportive. He said at one job, the attitude was like, if you have a question, man up and just figure it out, you know. So he contacted me and said, I really want to work at a job that helps people. And so he worked at finding a job like that, and I gave him some ideas. And he finally got a job at the nursing home in Westfield that actually my mother got hospice services out. And he's working in the kitchen, and he has become a Lutheran. And he was actually Lutheran for like months before he told me. I don't know if he thought I'd be mad or something. But we've always talked about him finding his crew, and so he has. But I hadn't heard from him since Christmas, and when I don't hear from my sons, I think something is not going so well, and they don't want to tell me. So I sent him and Kurt, my other son, Valentine's Day cards, and Joe sent me a text with a picture of the card that I sent, and he said, thanks, Mom, I really needed this, because I don't think he's dating anybody. But he said his job was going great. The nurses are so nice and caring. He's still at the nursing home. And the kitchen staff is like family. And church is going great. He's in the choir. So I'm so relieved. And I told Tessa, I said, I'm going to start sending my sons holiday cards for any, even the most minute holiday, because then they have to get back to me. So.
That's fantastic. Can I put a stone in for Joe?
Yeah.
Anybody else? My friends and I are all looking for jobs at this time, which is, I don't know if you knew, this is not a good time to be looking for a job. So it's been extremely frustrating, so I'm putting a stone in for that. Especially, I have a friend that has been trying to get a job with the DNR for a long time, and all of her jobs she keeps getting mass emails where they're like, this position doesn't exist anymore. Just kidding, yes it does. Just kidding, no it doesn't. It's been back and forth, which has been crazy. It's been crazy. But I have one joy for her, that she finally got an email back. She got a bunch of interviews because, I don't know, something changed. And they were like, okay, we're back. Would you like to come in for an interview? And she said, yes, please. And I also got an interview
for next week with United Way down in Bloomington, which is very exciting, and I hope that goes well. I don't know. We'll see. getting the interview is the hard part, so feeling very joyful about that.
So two things. I want to pass along a joy to, if you haven't seen it, look up Paul Simon on SNL's 50th anniversary. Paul Simon and Sabrina Carpenter did a song, and it's beautiful. So look it up and enjoy it. It's really cool to see Paul Simon. And then I've been having a lot of, like, symptoms that, a lot of miscellaneous things that were, like, vaguely concerning, but it's one of those things where, is it seasonal depression? Is it, you know, is it this? Is it that? Including some really aggressive weight gain. And I found out this week that my thyroid is off. I take thyroid medication. She's like, oh, you need quite a dose up. So, fingers crossed that is the problem, because that is a manageable problem. Oh.
Anybody else? Here's a stone for all those joys and concerns held in our hearts and for those that are not with us today. Our community is enriched by the sharing of these joys and concerns. And our closing words will be read by Sue Pittman.